and welcome to Funny Business. A little bit of funny and a lot of business. Actually, a lot of funny and a lot of business on this. It was a really good episode, and it's with our man, Steve Graham.
He's doing some big things over at Shadow Boxer. They're in the news. They're in the headlines at the moment because they just can't be stopped.
For all the right reasons, just coming seventh in awards and just doing their thing.
Seventh, you know, it's like...
It's my favourite number. It's his favourite number too.
But seventh in Australia. It's not like it's a...
Yeah.
It's not like there's 10 companies that entered and he comes seventh.
Yeah, I think it was like out of everyone in Australia.
That's you don't really even get a ribbon for that, do you?
I'll tell you what though, ever since meeting Steve... I've just felt good vibes. You know, I love the way he thinks about life, business and everything. And this chat's been a long time coming. It's been good to get him on the pod and to have Shadow Boxer a part of our Sydney event this week, which is crazy. On Wednesday, we'll be there. So he'll be there too with Conrad and maybe a few others. So it's exciting stuff.
I love their work. And I feel like this chat, if you're into the world of ventures and startups and interested in, I guess, the mindset and the approach you need to take to make stuff happen, this episode's for you. Hope you enjoy. See you soon.
Steve, thank you so much for jumping on the Funny Business podcast. For those at home listening, tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Well, first, absolute pleasure, fellas. Been listening for a long time, so good to be on and chatting with you both. I'm Stephen. I'm a strategy partner at Shadow Boxer, one of the original founders. It's a kind of like a venture studio slash product agency. Essentially, we do our work for you know, fees like a consultancy, but also for equity. And it allows us to give, I guess, founders a little bit of what they need, not just what they can afford. But I've been an advertising guy in the past before coming over from the UK and into a world of products at a big digital agency. I consider myself like a token Australian now. 9 years permanent resident, going to become a citizen soon. My little boy's a little Aussie. He's going to grow up with a silly little Australian accent. So I'm fully in.
Is that annoying that your kid's going to have an Aussie accent? Are you like trying to like some slang, a little bit of slang? Are you from Liverpool, Birmingham? Where
Liverpool. I grew up in Liverpool. I did live in Birmingham for a while. So my accent's a bit slightly bastardized, to be honest. But I do want him to go back home and, you know, feel the Scouseness from Liverpool, you know, pick up some of the words. He's got to have that. But I'm very happy for him to be a little Australian and have his own little Aussie slang too, right? Like, I'm going to take him to the AFL, the footy, but I'm also going to make him stay up late and watch 5 a.m. Liverpool games too. It's an essential thing, I reckon.
Oh. Keep him up late, mate. Just don't let toddlers sleep. I reckon that's a good way.
But that's the thing with soccer, football over here. The hours of watching, it's insane, isn't it?
It's pretty brutal. But when you get into it, I think it's good. So it's a pub in the CBD, which is always open for Liverpool games. So you kind of sneak out there on a Saturday, you know, you watch a game at 4 a.m. It's kind of fun because you've got all the other scouts in there. Everyone's cheering. It's like being back home for like a couple of hours. Yeah, it tires you out. I don't do as much of it as I used to, but I reckon you need to hold on to a little bit of home sometimes. And, you know, you guys will know too, there's nothing better than a big group of people cheering along, the team, right? Like we all saw that with Matildas earlier in the year. Like, you guys love it more than most nations, I reckon, getting behind your team. So it's good fun. It's a good lesson.
Well, tell us about, like, life growing up in Liverpool. When you were going through school, what did you want to do? What did you want to be?
Oh, you know, I think I was a very typical little kid. I was like, oh, I'll be a fireman, you know, something like that. But I spent a lot of my sort of secondary school years, like, really getting into writing. I love books. I also love film. So I was a bit of a nerd in many ways. You know, I also grew a lot slower than a lot of the fellas I used to play rugby with. So as I moved down the ranks of the rugby team, I thought, you know what, maybe I'll find some other pastimes. So I actually wanted to be a journalist. And I started off as a journalist in the start of my career just while I was actually at uni. I did enjoy it. But being in journalism around 2008, when there was like a financial crash, just wasn't a very lucrative career move. So I tried to take the writing skills and apply it into the world of creative agencies. And to be honest, I think it helped. Like I would say that for anyone who's not got like for anyone who does have a super technical skill, like, you know, engineering or, you know, legal or whatever, I actually think that being able to write is one of the most powerful tools in business. Doesn't mean you need to write like a perfect poet or, an author. Just be able to really clearly communicate your ideas and express yourself. It can be a really good outlet, but it's also a great way to frame your thinking. So I always do that. I always will write down what I want to say and what I want to think about, or before I even put it into a presentation to a client, or before I stand up in front of the team. It's kind of like a little bit of a hack for me. So it just gets the clarity out. And to be honest, you know, sometimes you read back what you've written, you go, bin all of that, edit it out, that was shit. And it's quite a nice cathartic sort of process to get rid of some of the guff that we sometimes say. Allows you to think before you speak, basically. But I don't know, growing up in Liverpool was it was fun. Like, it's a fun city. I don't know if you've ever been, like, when Aussies go to Europe, you know, it's hard. You've got like a shopping list of probably London, Paris, you know, Rome, the Amalfi. Liverpool doesn't always get a look in, but if anyone listening to this ever does get a go for one night out, that's all you need. Just one night out only, it'll be the best night of your life.
And when did you make the decision to come across to Australia, and what was behind that?
Oh, mate, well, so me and my partner at the time, now wife, we both were coming out for a friend's wedding. We flew into Melbourne. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. Then a few days later, we flew to Sydney. Thought, oh, this is also pretty cool. And then we flew to Byron for the wedding. I'm like, oh, it's better than London, isn't it? And just the sun and the happiness and how all the Aussies are kind of like happy British people, you know, still sarcastic, still got a great sense of humour, and culturally very similar, I think. But just much, much happier. We thought we probably want a little slice of that. So we got back home, a couple of months, booked one way tickets. It was pretty cavalier. We didn't really have a plan. Managed to hustle a little job before I arrived, which is where actually I met a lot of my business partners today at a big business back then called Isobar. And we never looked back, really. We thought we'd be there for 2 years, like a lot of people who move over do. I mean, you get soaked into the lifestyle and you realize that whilst, yes, it's very far away from home, it's just a beautiful place to live. I reckon anyone who leaves Australia and goes, I want to try somewhere else, they're making a mistake. This is the best place in the world to live.
I think too, like, when you come in and you form connections with people, it feels like you've just found like community straight away. You know, like when you're traveling and stuff, sometimes you can go to places and it can feel a bit like, if you don't know anyone or you're not that outgoing, it could be hard. But being totally the way you are and meeting the right type of people, I feel like luck and timing play a good part in all this stuff too.
Huge. Like, and that's for everything, really. You know, and I think, for us especially, we had a little bit of a helping start because we arrived here and we had a couple of mates who already lived here. And that definitely gives you a sense of community initially, because you can basically, get in on their mates straight away. You've kind of got a ready-made set. Christy, my wife, is like 10 times more charming and social than me. So she also makes more friends and more mates. So I was very lucky. I kind of rode her coattails. But, you know, it's also where you work, the people that you kind of surround yourself with in those early stages. And, you know, you guys have seen it too, right? I mean, I imagine a brilliant time when you guys first met. I mean, you know, lo and behold, a few years later, you're starting a business, you're doing this thing. That's the fun of it. And when you're traveling, it's super transient. It can be great. You can meet awesome people. When you're living somewhere, you've got to just go throw yourself into the local scene and meet as many people and be generous with your time and be generous with yourself. And I think, the world gives something good back to you then.
What about how you think about your career, like moving forward and taking on the next opportunity, like you've done with Shadow Boxer after Isobar and stuff? Like, how do you think about your career?
Honestly, I've never thought that hard about it, only because so much can change. I've always had a more, I guess, conceptual goals rather than super tangible ones. Like, I always wanted to work for myself. I always wanted, some autonomy in roles that I had, certainly when I first started here. I've always wanted to be able to, I guess, collaborate with cool people. Like, I get a lot of my kicks from other people's big missions. You know, you kind of work with someone who wants to go and change the world. And like, I don't know how I want to change the world yet, but I can get a real good kick out of someone who is trying to change the world. And if I can help them on the journey, that's really rewarding. So those are the kind of things that, kind of led me to Shadow Boxer from Isobar. And I also didn't want to be in that kind of corporate world either. I wanted to kind of make our own decisions. So when I think about my career now, I don't see a world where I'm not working at Shadow Boxer, but I do see Shadow Boxer as kind of a playground, which would open up more opportunities for not just me, but, the other partners in the business, to go and spin out, new ventures or new collaborations and new cool things and new ways to either make money or have an impact on the world. And hopefully we have an amazing alumni from the first initial team at Shadowbox who could go on to do awesome things too, we can maybe invest in or be their team for, you know. So I think the next 10 years is all about collaboration, meeting new people, and trying to help play a role in uplifting the Australian venture ecosystem too. You know, there's a lot of amazing smart people out there, and I'm a big believer that Australia already punches above its weight, but has so much more to give. And as a nation, should be more of a creative nation rather than one that, you know, digs stuff about the ground. So that's what gets me going and excited. And I think from a career perspective, Shadowbox will give me enough of a playground over the next 10 years to do that essentially, and open up those kind of new opportunities. And I think just having a sense of having an open mind to those things is probably key. Obviously there are certain, you know, things you kind of want from life. Like I want to make sure that, you know, I can enjoy a really good time with my son Ray and my family. And I want to make sure that I'm having fun too. I think fun is probably the most important factor for work for me. Like if you don't love what you do, you're never going to give enough of a shit about it to do a really good job. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, 100%, man. At the time of recording this, you guys have, you've had the awards night last night, got some recognition for the growth of Shadowbox. So we'd love to get into just maybe the first few years of you guys operating and I guess what the original concept was and how it's changed and just a general vibe on how it's gone so far.
Yeah, I mean, I feel very lucky and privileged to work with the people I work with because we've had an absolute blast. We're at just over 3 years old. When we started, we thought we were going to be a kind of a cool new creative consultancy, somewhere blending, you know, the worlds of your Deloitte's and your creative agencies. But I think very quickly after our first two projects kind of came in and they were for new businesses, we all realized and looked at each other and go, hey, how good is it when you're just starting something? What's the energy like when you're just starting something new? And then we also had a client who was, you know, had 6 months of runway left in his business. He was agitating a deal. He was like, I can't pay you, but I need you. And we thought, you know what? We're young. There's only five of us. Let's take a punt. Let's do a little bit of work for kind of sweat equity. And the geezer sold the business to Combank after 6 months. And we all got a little lick of cash. And I think that laid the seed money for Shadowbox to go and become the venture studio it is today. So it was, again, to the conversation we had before, there's a bit of openness and timing and luck and a willingness to kind of test and learn things out. But that's been brilliant. It's been kind of good times ever since. Last year when the market softened, it was definitely a bit scary, but we definitely needed that lesson too, you know, to tighten our belts a little bit, refocus the business, make sure we weren't going to get too big for our boots too, and really look after our team. So I'd say it's definitely been a really good 3 years, and I think we've built a really good culture, and we've actually had only one person leave the business, and that person left to start their own startup. So I kind of feel really proud about that fact. It means that people must kind of like working with us, which is good.
You can't hold a grudge then. You're like, oh, maybe. Yeah. You know, yeah. what are your thoughts on starting, like launching new things? You know, like you mentioned before, the energy, the fun, that's one of the things that really attracts me a lot to working at these early stage companies with people, because it's like, it's hard not to feel as it gets bigger and it gets away from the original core, not away from the original core concept, but like, more staff, more responsibility, less like
different problems.
Different problems, and it's
different problems. It
attracts a certain type of person to want to come. And in that early days, it doesn't really. There's no roadmap that says this is how you're going to make shit happen. It's like you got to do it on the fly. You've got to be adaptive. Like you've mentioned before. You've got to be open to new opportunities and letting things take it to different paths. Yeah. What are your thoughts on the type of people that you like working with, and this in the early stage space in general?
Well, I'm a massive risk taker. Like my risk profile is pretty high, and I definitely want to create safe space for people to embrace that side of them too. So that's what kind of I look for when, you know, I'm hiring team or when I want to bring more out of the people that we work with. And likewise, that's what I kind of resonate with when I see people doing awesome things and having a go. I think for us, we were very deliberate about hiring a very senior and capable team and not having too much operational structure. We just think if we give smart people a clear plan and some, you know, some goals to go after, they'll figure out the in-between stuff because they're smart. And we wanted to kind of keep that sort of philosophy. And that meant that when we think about a service business, we just don't want to get bigger than 30 to 40 people. And that doesn't mean we won't grow value in the company. It just means that the mandate is to grow value through not just selling our time. That's why we look to angel invest. That's why we look at kind of creative capital deals. That's why we're looking at, like, you know, joint venture with other service businesses, or hopefully in the future, building our own software and product companies too. And that's what I meant about Shadowbox being the playground. It's we will have the right smart people in that core team, and they'll be attracted to the opportunity to go and create their own things and collaborate with interesting people and new things. And from there, hopefully we build a bit of a gang around the business of other interesting businesses. That's kind of the loose plan. And sure, we'll get some knocks along the way and some things won't work. But the mindset of having super smart people who only need, you know, to be told that's the direction, that's where we want to go. And then they'll figure out and chart their own path there. And so far, that's been really rewarding, because you realize that actually everyone you've hired is 10 times smarter than you and has much better ideas of what to do. And you've helped to facilitate that, which is, I think, like a really cherished gift.
I think something you mentioned earlier before, like a safe place to create, you know, like having those people on board involved in different projects and being able to just sort of push themselves without the fear of just like it could blow up. You know what I mean? It's just like fucking making sure that they can get all their juices out, you know?
Mm, totally. So in 2019, Liverpool FC, my team, won the Premier League, and there was something about like the way that Jurgen Klopp, the manager, had like set up the culture of Liverpool over the 5 years of him being there. But I just found like really inspiring. He had four takeaways. I don't know if he's actually written this down or anyone's written it down, but this is kind of my interpretation. But it is probably fundamental to how I think about running Shadowbox and how I think about business generally. And it's definitely in the culture, strategy for breakfast kind of camp. But he had a really good philosophy around energy and enthusiasm. So basically, you make sure people are having fun at work, they'll give a discretionary effort, and they'll feel safe to fail. So that psychological safety is really important too. He also then looked at use data to find like outlier players, so people who buck the trend. We all use data at work, right? But use it to confirm something, not to challenge our biases and how we think. And that's something we've kind of looked to develop in Shadowboxer too. Is like, how do we find people who maybe have slightly left the center skill sets, but could contribute in a really interesting way? Or what if we had a slightly different sort of role but had slightly different incentives, we could get more out of people? And I think I took a lot from how we kind of operated the team. And obviously, the other thing he had was a really clear way to play, which was essentially kind of not super strategic, just get really good players and make sure those players can almost do a little bit of everyone's role. For you guys, it's like, oh, Robbie can do a bit of Locke's role if Lockie's, falling back, and vice versa. And that's quite good too, because you've always got teammates who can cover your back. And it's kind of, that philosophy's kind of worked, I reckon, as a framework for me, as a framework for us at Shadowboxer. And it just makes it more fun. Does that make sense?
I wouldn't put Locke in the forward line for too long. That's the only issue.
I've got too many goals. Right. And I was like, you got to pass them off. And I'm like, sorry, I'm allergic to kicking goals. that's the opposite.
Let's chat about like the whole, like, the venture space for us, and I feel like we've said it a few times in the pod and in conversations in passing too, is like we feel like we ended up in the startup space from starting this pod. Like we fell into it and we got more and more interested when we learned more about how it works, how raw it is compared to, I guess, other countries across the world, and just the amount of opportunity that exists here. And again, like coming from a bit of a corporate background myself, there's a lot of talent out there that are, I guess, over the last few years, especially with COVID, it gave everyone a bit of a reality check of where do you want to spend your time? Where are you working? Where are you investing? Like it works a lot. It takes a big chunk of your life up, you know? And
it's like zooming out. Everyone's zooming out.
And you mentioned a couple of times here, like creating an environment for people to just be themselves and do cool shit. And I feel like that's one of the things for me that really attracts me to this space, is like you really get the best type of people. If they do have the appetite for risk and want to come work in that startup space, is there's not much more, like you don't get the same, I guess, personal satisfaction reward
working in a corporate environment where you can't see the tangible difference or the change that you make on a day-to-day basis. Like you can slightly if you really want to get close, you know, like,
yeah, you can,
but not in the same amount of change that you can introduce and implement in such a small, agile environment. Is that one of the other things that you like, or the people that you work at Shadowbox are into?
Huge. The whole team's just absolutely obsessed with impact. And I think that's where they get a lot of the juice and kicks from. It's working on a really meaningful problem and making an impact very quickly. Like, it's all about speed kind of in this world of startups and progress and learning and failing and then succeeding. And like, I think it's funny, right? Like, the pre-product market fit, like, the normal laws of business do not apply. Like, everything you thought was like would make sense and was logical, it's like throw it out the window. It's literally funny business, right? Like, so it makes sense that you guys landed there. And I think in that world and environment, you can make a huge impact as an individual, and that's quite infectious, I think. Certainly for the people we've hired. And it is quite high stakes, you know. Like, working with someone who's put their life savings into a business and helping them, you know, bridge the gap between two funding rounds by, you know, getting an MVP out there. Like, it's pretty high stakes. It's pretty exciting, you know. Whereas sometimes you can be working in the corporate factory line and you can feel like what you're doing is a little bit meaningless. Now, that's not saying that's the case for everyone. But I certainly think that a lot of people who have left the corporate world to come to startup have had that same sort of story. They just didn't feel like they were making the impact they wanted, focusing on the meaningful problems that would affect the world around them. Like, you know, innovation's where we all need to be at, right? Like, the world's in a funny place, and we're not all doctors. So, you know, we're not on the front line of helping people. We're not all great scientists. So how do you get people who've got all the skills in the world of business and commerce to you know, go and actually innovate and change the shape of society and culture, and hopefully you know, one day we'll look back in the world too.
I love that you use the analogy of the Liverpool culture, and I feel like sports is such a good analogy for people, like, especially like me and Locke, who sports nuffies grew up playing sports. But
I understand.
I like that.
I speak that language.
But I think for me, it's also like the working in that sort of other environments. You mentioned like purpose and all the other stuff, but for me, it's also like that competitive kick. You know, like if you work at that early stage, if you mentioned like pre-product market fit, it's just about getting shit done. It's like, for someone who doesn't have
gets the
adrenaline kick working that thing, it's hard to switch off because it's like you got this crazy amount of stuff that you got to do. But the idea that you can band together in a team, like from like a team sports element, like come together, get some shit done,
rewarding,
and you got to lock in. So it's a high level of trust environment where you can really, if someone's not pulling their weight, it's like it's obvious, you know. But for me, like the idea of people coming together to make stuff happen. Like, sports is that best analogy for me that you can just, it's so similar, but it's just so different.
So similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned the word to me is team, right? Like, a lot of companies, like, we're a family. I'm like, bullshit. Like, there's no way. My family's two lovely people and they are nothing to do with work. And I think most people kind of know that. But you know who's really important? My team, my teammates. I'll like ride and die for them. And I think that's a really important like mindset to have. And that's why the parallel with sports sometimes is really powerful. Because yes, you've got great individual stories in sport too, but actually you've got a lot of great team stories and like the journey together and that momentum. You know, when you feel like you're on the avalanche down the hill, you know, and if you stop running or you falter, you're just gonna tumble away. But the momentum keeps building. Like that's a big rush. It's a really exciting rush. I think a lot of people in startups get that, and they feel that, and that's why they kind of love it from a, you know, individual kicks perspective just as much as the purpose and the meaningful nature of the problems they're solving.
Oh, I love that. I think it's a little bit like how you think about life too, like the mindset. So hiring the right people and doing the right. How do you identify the right types of people?
Yeah, and I think the important thing is to. When you're trying to hire people, there's not to, you know, hire people just like you. So I think you want people who have, personally for me, have that bit of risk appetite, have a sense of entrepreneurialism, maybe a slightly, a shadow boxer anyways, you know, slightly square peg round hole if they were to apply for all the jobs, but they're super smart, super talented, have really high emotional EQ, and there's a willingness to try stuff, and or at the very least, if there are things maybe there, if they are slightly less, you know, risk, if they are more risk averse, sorry, then but they have a willingness to become more risk, have a higher propensity for risk. And that's a great thing too, because you can kind of teach that, and you can kind of bring that out and make it work with people who are like that, and they can by osmosis soak it all up. But I think, you know, we've as we kind of said, we're, you know, we haven't had any much people leave the business. So I actually didn't do a lot of hiring at the moment, because we did it all in the first 18 months, and no one's gone, which I hope stays that way, to be honest. It's a very fortunate position to be in. But it doesn't mean that we need to be really careful when we do bring new talent in, and make sure that they are the right fit, because they're coming into quite a tight, well-oiled machine and team. And you want them to complement or shake things up in the right way.
I think like that risk tolerance, like the people becoming to be a bit more risky after seeing what's going on. I think that's an important gap, you know, important problem, because I think there's so many people just paralyzed sitting there going, I want to do it, but I don't think I can. And I haven't seen, you know what I mean? The certainty's not there, and people have not seen the roadmap, but people like us and talking to people, I think it's important for us to just encourage that behavior, you know?
Definitely. And to be honest, I think, you know, just to answer the question you had just before again, actually, I would love it if the next hire we make is someone who started a business, maybe learned, had a few battle scars, didn't quite work out, and they're kind of licking their wounds and getting ready to go again. Like, we'd be a great place for those people, because they've got great lessons to learn in, and it's, they can stick and they can stay in the world of kind of entrepreneurialism by proxy while they kind of get themselves ready to go back out into the fight. And that's why I'd love everyone who ever leaves Shadowbox to go out and do their own thing. I think that would be, that would make me the most happy, more than like financial results, more than, you know, a holiday home in Byron one day, more than like, you know, a big return on investment. I think it'd be if people go and do some awesome stuff and they go, oh, I wouldn't have done that if it wasn't for my journey at Shadowboxer. Like, that would be the coolest thing, I reckon.
You mentioned at the start of the chat that your career started with writing and interested in journalism and that sort of stuff. Do you classify yourself as a creative?
Not technically, in the terms of how a lot of people probably think about creatives. But I as a strategist, I think that is actually a creative act. Like, I think for a strategy to be good, it has to be slightly unconventional, has to be a new way in. And I think that requires lateral thinking. You got to put two concepts together that don't usually fit, but it unlocks a new opportunity. So I do think of myself as a creative in that perspective. I think creativity as a mindset or as a tool is vital for our business. It's vital for anyone starting something new, because you've got to see the world differently, and you've got to try and put things that don't fit together in a way that creates something new. So definitely from that perspective. But I don't walk around calling myself a creative, because I feel like all the designers in the team or the writers in the team would look at me funny. And I'm definitely not as good at a writer as everyone else in the team. So I have to be careful about what I call myself. But it's cool to say you're creative, isn't it?
You know? Steve, we were on a call the other day, and I actually, in the past, I agree with 100% what you're saying. Like, that's how I think me and Locke think of what we do a little bit. But I actually said in a chat with someone the other day, I was on like maybe it was a sales call and that. I said, oh, me and Locke aren't that creative. And then Locke stopped the conversation that we're having mid-conversation.
Sorry, we're going to have to sort this out. Don't throw me under the bus with you. Like, do you know what happens with our stuff? Do you know how it all comes out there? I do it.
He paused the conversation to say, like, I don't know if you know, but the graphic asset that we made for our Sydney event that Shadowboxer is sponsoring, I had people slide into my DMs and say it's the best work they've ever seen.
What was the inspiration for that, by the way? Because I'm pretty excited, and I wish I had a mullet now. But yeah, you kind of talked me through that.
Oh, honestly, I was just like, it's at Fish Burners, and I go, a fish wallpaper would be cool. And then that AI thing with that, I think it was called Epic, that app where you can change into the yearbook, and was like, well, that's interesting. It's going to stop people in their tracks, you know? And I don't know, just canvaed it up, baby. You know what I mean? But because we're building this shit on the fly, all our stuff is just like making it up as we go. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, shit. We need this happening. Let's do it here. So I think it's like, even like time boxings and things where it's like, there's 2 hours to make this happen. It's just like, you just got to go. I think for us, the way we work or the way I work, I love that shit where it's just like, that's the deadline. I've got to make it happen. Your brain just starts just going, you know what I mean?
It's about running lean too. You know what I mean? Like, we had when we were doing Wellbeing Network Consulting Company, we had 10, 12 staff, and it was a very different sort of business. And now what we're doing with Dream Big Social Club, it's me, Locke, and Chris. So if shit needs to get done, there's no one else to outsource different things to. So the idea of like wearing multiple hats, juggling different things, and
the concept of like done, not perfect is like something's got to get out the door. Otherwise we're just wasting time. You don't have, we don't have time to sit and figure out like, is this completely right? But obviously you nailed it with the,
thanks. Thanks for bringing it up again.
You're just so creative. I just want to let you know that you're so creative.
You're definitely both creatives, right? Because you're producing things and putting things out in the world. That's it's always an art form when it comes to content, great Canva designs, you know. It's I definitely classify you both as creatives, but maybe one more than the other.
I love, like you mentioned strategy, and that I think another guest that we had on who I think you'll love too, Steve, if you don't know him already, Scott Bateman. You know what I mean? Like thinking about businesses in different ways. And I feel like you're saying the same thing there, where it's like merging the different industries. Like we say that with the social club, like connecting the right people, you know, different industries and that, but that's where the magic is, isn't it?
100%. And like, you know, anyone who's starting a startup is a creative, because they found a problem and they found a new solution to kind of answer it, but it's completely disruptive. Or they've, you know, they've looked at different business models from different categories and gone, hey, let's jam that in here. You know, wouldn't that be interesting? So I think you need to have that curiosity, the willingness to try stuff, the done not perfect mentality, and a bit of bravery to try something. And that all comes from a creative brain and a creative mindset.
What are brands that you like? You know, like inspirations inside or outside your field? Like, what
do
you
have? Stephen Jobs on the wall posters?
One of my most my pet hates is when you go, hey, what brand do you like? And everyone's like, Apple. And it's like, sure, it's great. It's probably one of the best. But like, you've got to think of something else. You know what I mean? Let me think. I think from a brand perspective, other than all of the brands that we've worked on and created for our clients, obviously, I think, you know, if I was going to pick a mainstream one, it's always been Nike. If I was going to pick a more niche brands generally, I absolutely love like some of the cool coffee brands that you kind of seen popping up at the moment, like Little Roasters, because it's been made by like, you know, an owner operator. Essentially the only assets they've got is like a cool little illustration, a logo, and a t-shirt. Kind of like, you know, like I love brands when you see like Shadowbox or Dream Big Social Club, because they're not big amount in the world, but it's a true expression of some individuals. So I find that kind of fun. I love the Ace Hotel. Have you been to the Ace Hotel in Sydney?
No, we probably should have booked that when we're going up. Is that where you're staying?
That's where I'm staying, mate. That's where I'm staying. No, it's just
sleep in your bed.
He's just trying to
get a free room.
It's a free room.
Upgrade to the penthouse.
Yeah. Hopefully they're listening. That's a cool place, you know, and like every little detail of that that hotel has been so well thought about. It is so individually crafted. And it just makes you feel good. And I think brands are kind of like that. Everyone has a brand, or, you know, a business has a brand, whether they like it or not. So when you put care into every single element of it, it really shows, however it comes across, whatever it's communicating, whatever the associations it's building are. I definitely have that mindset. So I do love brands where someone just put some care into it. You know, someone's gone on to Canva and they've gone on to AI and they've looked for a fish background. That's what I'm after, you know, that little bit of craft and care.
I love that. It's like when you see the real, like, delicate, like, what is it called? China? That artwork? You know what I mean? Where it's real delicate and there's real, like, you can see the attention to detail. It's like that would have taken ages to make compared to something else or a clothing item. You know what I mean? Where it's like that's done. That feels like handmade, like the Etsy type of vibe.
Made with love. Is that what you're trying to say?
Like made with love.
Home cooking. What do you cook? What do you cook lately?
You like 2 minute noodles, Steve? You like them or you're off there?
They have a place in everyone's life. So I'm not going to say I don't like them or I'm off them, because they will come back in my life at some point again. Haven't had 2 minute noodles in a short period, I will admit. My wife does love them though. So there's always a few packs knocking around. It's kind of her go-to like secret, like the pot noodle, the dirty little secret, you know?
I love
that. Are you 2 minute noodle guy?
Noodle guy. I've started to incorporate it into stir fries and that, because it's just easy. You know what I mean? Look, it's a versatile ingredient.
Yeah. It's
very versatile.
It's in his.
I've heard you say that. What did you do? Debut a new word.
I wouldn't say. I wouldn't be really waiting for you to like host a dinner party or anything like that. You know what I mean?
He's not that guy. Not that guy.
Chicken nuggets.
Chicken nuggets. Something it's goes like in the oven.
Stuff that you get at Smorgies or Pizza Hut. You know what I mean?
I've got a product for you. So just launched this week is a product called Safeful. So Shadowbox have built it, but it's part of a bigger social enterprise organization. And it's like a recipe app. This kind of flips the script. So it basically goes, what have you got? We'll give you a meal to make from it. So it's kind of like a flexible framework. But it's just been launched. And the whole purpose is about helping people reduce waste at home with kind of the stuff. You know, when you look at a sad onion that's been in the back of your cupboard for like, you know, too long, or, you know, you've got like a quarter of a pot of cream cheese left, and you've got nowhere for it to go. It's kind of all of that kind of stuff. You should try it, mate, and get yourself off of 2 minute noodles.
I need that. I honestly need that shit. Cause I look in Rob's pantry, I go around Rob's and M's, and all they got is like flour and all these different ingredients. I'm like, you just gonna have to make everything. They make damper and shit. Like, just chill out.
Can you plug in like Icy Poles, Tim Tams, chocolate, and 2 minute noodles? What can I make with that?
Yeah. You might break the system. You might break the system. But I'm a big Icy Pole guy.
Hey, man, I'd love to rewind back a little bit. I know we were talking about brands before, but dipping your toes in the world of angel investing now and starting to back and invest in interesting businesses and founders. Yeah. Tell us about all what the stuff you learn at the moment and that side of things.
Yeah. So we've been kind of angel investing at Shadowboxes since the start because we work with early stage founders and we'll basically give them often like a creative capital sort of like deal with some of the work that we're doing. Say we're building a product and a portion of it will be for equity. So we've been practicing that for a while, and it's a great position to do that work from, understanding the product. More recently, it's been awesome to do a little bit of learning around how the more sophisticated investors might approach these things. But for me, I just look for people who are absolute guns and infectious, you know. It's quite an emotive thing for me because you're kind of making a bit of a bet, right? But if they've got some great experience and they can get you excited, then that's like a massive tick straight away for me. And that's been a pattern that we've observed over the past 3 years too. Like people who can make your skin tingle a little bit when they tell you what they want to go and do is usually go and do something pretty amazing. And then we also, you know, we look for outliers too, and outlier kind of, you know, industries and people trying to do something which maybe conventionally you go, oh, that feels a bit hard. Like it feels like a lot of venture capital investors in Australia just love B2B SaaS and marketplaces, you know, but mostly B2B SaaS. And don't get me wrong, we love that too. We absolutely love that too. But it's kind of cool when you find someone who's bucking the trend, or, you know, is going to be maybe hard, is going to find investing hard. But they kind of do it anyway, so I do like that as well. I think from an industry perspective, we get around climate and health a lot, just because I think they're massively important areas to stick, you know, your money where your mouth is. And I'm not going to be able to solve all the problems in climate and healthcare, but there are smart people who are doing that, so I definitely want to back those guys. And then I think start may use the language of like spikes. The other spike I look for is just like, what is this going to be 10 times better for someone than the current solution? And if it is, then I usually think that's worth having a chat about. I think you guys spoke to Mark John from Frontline a few weeks ago on your pod, and he came into our office the other day and he goes, I just look for something that's going to make people happy. And if it's going to make people like really happy, then I find a way of how can I commercialize that? You know, what would I need in place to make that into a product? It's a good way to think about angel investing. Like when you're looking and scanning through, you're saying, will this product or will this idea make someone really, really happy? It's a very simple question to ask. What do you guys think about it too? Because obviously you're getting into that space as well. Does any of that resonate, or have you got like other ideas you add to it?
Oh, no, I love that. And firstly, just want to say Mark John is a bloody legend. Ever since having him on the pod and learning more about him and his philosophy.
He's
and
an
stuff,
infectious dude, isn't he?
Yeah, and it's just like, I think it's like you, bro. Simple, you know what I mean? It's like infectious personalities, people solving different problems, you know what I mean? And it's just, for me personally, it comes down to the people, you know what I mean? It's like who's running it, whose dream is it, how do they want to build it, and helping them shape that, for me, is just like, fuck yeah, you know.
I think impact has come up as a word that we've talked about a lot, and I know it can mean lots of different things. And for us, impact might be like the person's background and why they started this thing and their understanding or their deep subject matter expertise of what it is, or it might be the problem they're solving is going to have this big impact, or a lot of people see it as like, oh, it has to be a climate thing or whatever. And for us, it's not. Impact can be a word that we just really look at and go, is this something that we can believe in and back, and we understand why they're doing it and what the purpose was, and we can see tangibly how it would fit into society, you know what I mean? Like,
and solve problems.
How would this, in once, if they're talking like, oh, is it the early stage, but like once it's up and going, you mentioned like making people happy, that's a great measure for us. It's like,
impact, right? Yeah.
Is this gonna, like, where would this fit in? Is it really needed in the world? And like, it's a weird way to play it up, but I think that like a society for me and like the whole, like the idea of, is you can always try and formulate, may have this thing where people try and say like, you need this and the spike of that. It's like, fuck, is that actually going to work? Is that, you're asking people to change their behaviors too much to make it thing? Yeah. Is it just like, things are going to be easy. You know, like the world is like, people have attention span of six seconds or some shit, you know, like it's hard enough to stay focused for 5 minutes. Even when Locke's talking, bored me yesterday, bored me to death.
The best stuff, Steve, honestly, is when you meet those people and you feel like you just want to run through walls after, like you're feeling energized, not drained. And it's like, God, like things are ticking when they're talking. Yeah. And it's like the stuff that you said before, it gives you the goosebumps on the back of the neck. And we have it all the time in pods and stuff. We're kicking each other. And when we meet founders doing stuff, like, good.
I think
that's really good energy.
A big learning for us is like, we talk to so many different founders. I'm sure you're the same. It's like, if you don't even like manufacture a little bit of the energy, like if you don't talk about energy with what it is that you're doing, you're not going to get me to buy into it, because it's like, fuck, you can't vampire me.
You're not performing surgery. Just chill, you know?
Like, smile about what you're doing. You know, like, don't be so serious. Like, life's hard as it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Like, you know, some of the founders we work with, it's just, it's infectious. I don't want to pump up the tires too much, but pretty much every single person we've ever worked with, we've had that first meeting gone, oh, and you do feel energized, you feel pumped up. It's the reason you get out of bed. And you know that when they go and talk to investors or when we talk to their first customers, that's how they're going to feel. So you kind of go, shit, we're on here. Let's go. But running through walls, that's a good way to describe it. If you want to run through walls for someone, that's a good sign, but it's worth your time to invest. And sure, you might get it wrong, but you won't care, because you were on the journey and you wanted to do it for them. I think that's a nice emotional side of investing, which I think is a good way to think about it.
And like you mentioned before, like fun, I think that's an important thing for us, is just life is too short too. And like, you know, like high performing teams locking in, it's fun winning and it's fun celebrating and it's fun doing all those things. But I just feel like it's an element that sometimes, even I think I'm a fun guy, but then I'm working. I'm like, I need to be a bit more me, you know, myself, and just like not be so serious and think too hard. It's just like, fuck, there's a reason. Like, just,
you mentioned, we've just said team, but at that early stage, is it really is like, do I want to spend time with this person building this stuff? Are we going to be able to, is there that sort of connection that we can do something together? And if there's not, maybe that's not the best thing for us all to be involved in what we're doing, because we got to spend so much time. You got to know each other inside out. You got to, like, it's a lot of hours. Everyone always talking about outcomes, but it's, in startups, it's output as well, as much as it is outcomes. Because if you don't do more shit, you got to make stuff happen.
Yeah, 100%. I think the human brain's like the biggest processor of data, right? So I'm actually a big believer in gut. Your instinct is good. If you don't feel it straight away, there's probably a reason why. So you got to like trust that, I reckon. And when you do feel something, there will be a reason why. So you're going to want to lean into that. And yeah, you're right. Like, the, you need that energy and a collective feeling like, hey, we can do something together, because you need that energy to create some momentum in an early team to go and, you know, move needles, make impact, hustle through stuff. So it's definitely endorse that perspective, mate.
It's probably a good segue. A question we ask all our guests is a bit of a mental health one. What do you turn to in your life when you're looking to get some energy back?
Oh, man, it's a very, very simple framework, right? Like, I call it giggles, beer, and romance. Giggles for the kids. Beers with my mates and romance with my wife. That will always fail safe and top up my buckets, and when I can get back to whatever I need, you know, if energy's feeling low, that's where it comes back from. I'd also say that giggles, beers, and romance, so you can have that for free. But it's, you know, like, so specifically last week I was feeling flat, you know, you was like burnt out, and I went and did took my little boy Ray to gymnastics. for 2 hours of him just like basically running around, laughing, giggling, doing the shit he wasn't supposed to do, what the instructors were telling him, bouncing on trampolines. I was on a high for like 4 days straight after that. And then every Tuesday I played five-a-side futsal with a few of my oldest mates. And to be honest, you don't really go for the game. It's a good exercise, but you go to pub after for a couple of pints and you talk like you never usually would talk. You know, I think it creates an opportunity to go, hey, how's your parenting going? Or how you feeling in your relationship? And you have some real conversations that blokes aren't always very good at. So that's been awesome. And then, and to be honest, any time where you get to the weekend and you get a babysitter and you go out with your missus or your partner and nice fancy dinner, yeah, you're topped up then too. You feel good, you put on a shirt, you have a shower. So yeah, it's a very simple framework, but I reckon it's a good one.
I feel like you're really good at distilling things down into simple forms. Do you have a book at home that you just have a bunch of all these frameworks and stuff on how you think about, like writing out things in your life? Do you have things like that, or is it just all in the brain?
Oh, I reckon I make up a lot of stuff on the spot, to be honest, mate. But it does exist somewhere, and I do like simplifying things down. And I'm surrounded by people who, you know, in a strategy team, who do that constantly anyway. Like, so people are always trying to distill things into a really simple idea of thought. And it's probably the old advertising, you know, person in me too. Like, how good is just a great quote or a one-liner? Because it can resonate so quickly with people and people understand it. So I do value it. And I probably got, you know, quite a lot of notes like that. But it's just to write something down and get thrown in the bin later. It's more about the process of writing than it is actually about saving it, you know, to read through. But maybe one day we'll write some frameworks.
I saw Mark John got you on the shower notepads as well. He loves it, doesn't he?
I'm definitely about that, to be honest. I reckon I'm going to try and get some waterproof paper. I was taking down his tips feverishly. It's a good one. So I reckon that's where my ideas come from too, to be honest. It's when you're having a shower or a cold swim, which I've been trying to get into recently, which is not, it's hard to get yourself up and about for it, but it's such a great, like, rewarding feeling after. Or any of those moments like that where you can't take your phone, I think a great place is to come up with ideas and get a little bit of a refresh.
Oh, you don't take your phone in the shower? I do. Waterproof.
Oh, yeah, there's been put times on some music.
Like, hand out, out the shower like this, yeah. Still replying while I got the water in the thing. It's like,
quickly before you showered, you got this?
I remember why Em come down the hallway one time and I was in there. I was like, we were peppering meetings. I was like, fuck, I haven't showered. I was jumping in the shower in the thing and I was still trying to text and work while I was in the thing. Like, yeah. What the fuck are you doing? I was like, all right, that's a good reality check. Anyway, we're getting to the pointy end of 2023. What's on for the rest of the year and what can we expect to see next year?
Oh, man, we're at the moment, it's, well, for me, you know, I'm looking to have a strong finish with the business and then bugger off for 2 weeks and have a really chill time with, you know, wife and kids. But Shadow Boxer is pumping our products. So we've got the one I mentioned before, Safeful. We've got another great one in the climate space, helping small to medium businesses make more conscious decisions around their power or, you know, their resources to kind of become carbon efficient, but also save money. That's called Green for Business. And then early next year, we'll be launching a new product with an awesome founder who should speak to one day, called Goldie, which is like a parenting AI executive assistant. So it kind of does all the kind of parenting scheduling that you need, you know, between schools and daycare emails and all that kind of guff. And it kind of operates as like a, you know, the glue between you and the other, you know, executive in the household, your partner as you're looking to raise bundle of kids. So that'll be an absolute belter. I mean, some of the few things in a few cabs in the rank too, but the focus for me and the team is just like, let's get these products out there in the wild, new downloads, customers, and you know, get that reward from producing and creating things.
Well, man, if people want to connect and find your stuff, how do they find you?
I haven't got too much stuff. You can find me on LinkedIn, but I'm much better. If you go to LinkedIn, see my email or phone number, drop me a text or an email. I'm much better in person than I am on there.
Oh, I love that. We'll put your phone number in the description then.
Yeah, do it. Do it.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate you coming on.
It was a pleasure. Thanks a lot, lads.
Shadow Boxer. I reckon that could be the toughest name out there. Best name, I reckon. Fuck Seventh. That's the best name. That's the first best name. First place best name.
First best name.
That's not proper English,
that's
is
crazy.
It?
Crazy.
Yeah, is my brain working today? But you know what I mean.
There's been a few questions about the state of your brain lately.
Well, I heard you during this podcast, and I saw you just sort of just freeze for a little bit, and just sort of it's like a robot malfunction
in the Matrix. I just had a glitch in the Matrix.
Yeah, you did a little.
Is he alive or is he not?
I spent the whole morning before the chat shadow boxing in the mirror.
Yeah,
yeah, just getting myself pumped.
How are you going? How's the form? How's the technique?
Form's not there, technique's not there, but I let out some anger. It was good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who would win in a boxing match between me and you?
I reckon I would, but I'd love to see Steve in a ring though, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm asking the question about me and you.
Yeah, I'd clean you up easy. You can't move. You got no knees. You probably got the right technique and form, but there's no power.
You're like Homer Simpson, mate. You run out of puff after the first punch.
Yeah, but you can keep hitting me in the head and I won't feel anything.
I like that. Well, hey, if you've listened to this episode and you've listened to more than one episode of Funny Business and yet to send it to a friend, hit that share button now and let them know all the good work that we're doing, because there's pods coming out all the time and Funny Business only grows when you share it around. So thank you so much.
Hey, Funny Business listeners, Caleb from SquareX here. I just wanted to jump on and let you guys know at the end of this ep, SquareX is currently open for investment. So if you're interested in learning more about what we do at SquareX and want to get involved in the digital future of the agricultural supply chains, you can reach out to me directly on LinkedIn or to the Dream Big Social Club team to learn more.